This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Finding Your Peace, 32 Principles to Help You Live Your Calling. And the author is Julie Corinne. And Julie joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Julie.
Aloha.
Yes, aloha. You in Hawaii, I'm in Texas. And you've got great things to help us with. Find our calling, very important. You say, you know, you can open up this book at any chapter and get a gem of wisdom that can apply to life immediately. That's so important in today's fast-paced world to get some motivation, to get some direction. These 32 principles, we'll talk about some of them. But first of all, let's find out about you and how all this came about.
So the book came about, I was living in Chicago, and I hit what I call a frustrating event, or I was in a sort of just restlessness of the soul part of my life. And so I went to a retreat in Maui called Excuses Beyond by Wayne Dyer. And there was a certain point in the conference where I was came up to the microphone because he asked people to come up and say what their calling was in life and the excuse that they were using for not doing it. So I went up there and I told them that my calling in life was to write a book and speak around the world, and the excuse I tell myself is I'm too young. Needless to say, Wayne Dyer flipped my thinking from I'm too young to I'm at the perfect age. So I went home from this retreat in Maui, and I went home to Chicago, sold all my stuff, closed down my company, and moved out to Maui with two bags and the material that I started for the book, and was determined to write the book, heal my life, and then go out and give this gift to others. So it's kind of a crazy story, but and now there are some really, really great things happening because I moved in the direction of what my calling was pushing me towards. So that's how it began, and now it's a whole new journey that is, you know, taking some amazing steps that I'm just looking and allowing to happen. So,
well, one of your reviews from Robert Jordan, author of How They Did It, Billion Dollar Insights from the Heart of America, he says, Julie is a guardian angel, a true coach and teacher, and she puts the whole of her incredible and wonderful spirit into this thoughtful and timeless compendium for success and fulfillment. Wow, what a sentence. That's loaded.
That's an incredible review. And Bob Jordan is an amazing entrepreneur. He actually created what I think the next book is for Think and Grow Rich is for the Midwest. And he collected all these entrepreneurs who have made millions of dollars, started from nothing, and created million-dollar companies. And so getting a review like that from him is pretty awesome. And he is quite the entrepreneur himself.
So what makes your book so unique compared to other self-help books?
Oh, what makes my book so unique is that there is a structure. There's 32 principles, and that's the structure. But there's so much freedom within that structure in order to live your calling. Because sometimes people think it's just like this one thing. Well, it's accumulation of really being able to focus the mind, which is 8 principles of the mind. Be lean in the body, so really take care of your body. Inspire or ignite your spirit and listen to your soul, so the GPS system of your soul. So it's all 32 of them. So the point is that you can work on each one of those, and it doesn't have to necessarily be in a linear fashion, because life is not linear. Our brain doesn't work linear. But the thing is that you have the ability to kind of create your own style of really learning to master those 32 principles. So that's what I love about it, because each person gets to harness and do each one of the 32 principles how they feel is supposed to, how it's supposed to kind of line up for them in their life. Because you really can't take a person and move them down a linear fashion, because that's just not how life is. So that's what I get so excited about, is that people have the ability to find their own unique and creative way to master those 32 principles. And inevitably, that is definitely the most direct way to put your puzzle piece in the puzzle, or what, that's the representation of living your calling.
Well, we all know that life today especially is filled with stress. Stress is the number one killer. And you've got a way for us to, I guess, just live life according to your calling, and all that stress really goes away, because if you love what you do, you don't have the stress.
Oh, that is so true. And I think one of the principles in the book, and it's actually in the body section, is called posture. And the way that I describe posture, even though I'm a personal trainer and I help people really align their bodies so that everything, you know, their muscles are in alignment and they really have good posture so they can walk around and be healthier, that book, that chapter is actually a lot about lifting your chest up and leading your life with your heart and not your head. And so that's what I think of when you're just talking, is that, you know, when you really lift up your heart and you let your heart lead the way in your life, it's such an easy way to really enjoy your life. But what comes out of enjoying your life and doing what you love is that internal peace. And that is what is priceless. And so just one little tool that I tell people is roll your shoulders back, lift your chest up, and let your heart lead the way. Just shift your head back a little bit, and you'll find a lot of peace when you are letting your heart guide your life.
Well, as someone said, we've got to stand up a little taller and lift our eyes. I think that's what I hear you say. When you lift your eyes, you start seeing the horizon. You know, it's you're not looking at the ground anymore.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So your book is broken down into three acts, but in act two, you have mind principles, body principles, spirit principles, and soul principles. And, of course, that makes up the 32 principles, 8 principles in each one of these sections. So pick out a couple of these chapters that, you know, in the time we have, just to kind of give us a little insight, give us a little depth on what this means.
Okay. One of the most important principles, which I absolutely love, and I feel like is essential to mastering the other 31 or all 32, is presence. And presence is the second principle of the mind. And I think being able to really master being in the present moment is something that we sometimes take for granted. You know, the past is the past. The future we have no control over. So really being in that present moment, one, gives you peace right away. And then two, it really allows you to take the baby steps that you need to take in order to live out your calling. And so if somebody could say, hey, you can only pick one of your principles, I would absolutely 100% pick presence. And the way that I have learned to really master that principle is by attaching an action to it that reminds me to live it throughout my day. So every time I smile, I think to myself, now is now, and I'm just going to focus on what I have right in front of me. And so what I encourage people to do is to pick an action step that reminds them to be present. So it may not be smiling, but I want people to kind of have their own style of mastering this principle. So I invite people to pick something that reminds them to be present, and I think that is just one of those essential principles to help us move our lives forward and live out our calling.
You've been talking about the body. You help people lose weight, get healthy?
Absolutely. I have been in the health and fitness arena for 10 years. And so I think it's really important to take care of our body, because our body is what carries us to be able to do our calling. And it's also, we need to have that energy. We need to feel well rested. And so all 8 of the principles in the body really do help you to live a lean life. And when you're living a lean life and a balanced life, you automatically will, if you are a little bit overweight, you will lose weight. And they're really, really simple things. So I always say I teach fitness. I don't do fitness, I teach it. So, you know, making sure that people have enough water and enough daily activity, learning to eat well, and learning to sleep well. All of those things are really, really simple. But once they're harnessed and once they become habits, you'll automatically be at a healthy weight, which will give you energy, which will also inspire you to go out and live your calling. So everything is so intricately connected in order to really drive forward in a healthy manner.
Well, it's so important to find out our purpose in life. So many people are just floundering through life, not knowing why they're here, and that is so critical.
It really is a critical thing. I found over the years, actually, when I started off just in health and fitness and personal training and really working with clients, I found that you could spend an hour really working out on their different habits to become some of the healthier life, but they were living 8 hours at work, and being inspired and really doing what you love affected their health. And that's part of what spurred me writing the book. And so, you know, when you're really doing what you love, it brings you that internal peace. And I think one of the things that people sometimes struggle with, and if they're struggling, I know what it feels like. They feel that restlessness in the soul, like, I should be doing something else, but I'm not doing it. And it just feels like, you know, a tug of war inside, internally. And I think that one really, really simple thing is just to spend a little bit of time, spend a half hour, an hour, and write down what you really want to be doing. Write down what you're naturally talented at, what's so easy for you, and how you can serve other people in only the way that you can do it. And I think when people spend a little time to figure out what that is, set some goals and start moving in that direction, it's so much easier than what our brain sometimes tries to overanalyze and think it to be. And so that's just one simple way of helping people really honor their calling, honor their heart, and then, of course, the internal peace arrives from that state.
And let God lead your life.
Yes, 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 absolutely. It's absolutely essential. We are so small compared to the universe. This, our one person, our one being is so small, and God knows everything. He created the universe. He knows it all. When we surrender to God and we acknowledge Him in our lives and we let Him lead our lives and humbly become a servant of God, and you ask Him to guide you in your calling, He will every single time be there to guide you. And that's where the miracles show up. Wow, stuff that we know that we couldn't do on our own, He will place in front of us, and then all you have to do is accept it and keep acknowledging Him, and accept it and keep acknowledging Him, and God will lead our lives. And it will be beyond what you can even imagine. And that's the great thing of really having faith in something outside of us.
So take time, as you say, to honor your purpose, and you will be surprised what will happen with that one single habit. So tell us about taking time to honor our purpose.
Well, I think a lot of times there's so much social media and there's so much marketing coming at us, and then there's also other people's agendas, you know, and other people have things that they're running and they need your time. Well, if you don't take a little bit of time to honor what you really want and stand strong in that space by doing things, so say, for example, for me, for writing, spending time writing and, you know, spending time putting workouts together that I want to create to help other people, I could easily have other people ask me, oh, Julie, can you do that? Oh, Julie, can you do that? And the next thing you know, you'll be going around helping a bunch of other people or be sucked into a bunch of marketing, and you didn't spend any time honoring what only you were made to do. So that's why I feel it's so important to take some time for yourself and spend an hour, spend a couple hours cultivating and creating what only you can do. And from there, then your purpose will start rolling forward. But it's really important to stand strong and honor what you know that only you can do to serve other people.
We've been listening to Julie Corinne. She is the author of her book, Finding Your Peace, 32 Principles to Help You Live Your Calling. Julie, tell us how to get your book.
You can get Finding Your Peace at www.juliecorinne.com. And it's also available on Balboa Press if you're looking for the ebook. So those are the two places that you can receive the book.
Well, thank you so much, Julie, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you so much, and mahalo.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on TogiNet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Horse in the Wilderness, and the author, Debbie Eccles, and she joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Debbie.
Hello, how are you?
Great to have you with us. What a great story, compelling characters. Brent Travis, we're going to learn about his struggles and challenges, and Autumn Parker's, and the really the underlying theme of morality and the need for it in our lives. Let me read what you've written about your book. You say Horse in the Wilderness is the story of one man's journey from exile in a self-made wasteland to a fully restored relationship with God. And, of course, it addresses the challenges of living a biblical lifestyle by using a fictional setting. So before we find out more about these characters and some of the plot, tell us about yourself, Debbie, and why you wrote the book.
Well, I really felt led of the Lord to write it. I have noticed that when people get out of fellowship with God, sometimes they are reluctant to think that he could accept them back again, and that is basically what this story is about. I felt that a fictional setting was a good way to present it rather than a how-to book or something of that nature. I feel that people take more than they realize of their behavior from what they see on television and on the media, and people who are not necessarily likely to read a how-to book or a self-help book, or especially not a Christian one, might be influenced by reading a fictional account of how people handle life's dilemmas in a biblical way instead of the secular ways that most people approach them.
Why start out with a missing horse and a missing boy?
I have thought about that part of the story for years, and I really didn't know where to go with it, one day the Lord just kind of impressed on me to start writing. So I started there, and it just, the whole thing just took off from that first chapter.
Well, let's find out more about this Brent Travis. Tell us about Brent.
Well, he at one time was a very strong Christian, and when his wife cheated on him, he turned his back on God, and he just, he felt like everything he worked for, everything he believed, had become lost. He didn't believe anything anymore about God, that except God had turned against him, and he just turned his back completely on God. And he was a man of integrity and honor, but he could not get past this, and he found it very difficult to live in a relationship that did not involve his Heavenly Father. And the only way he managed to live was with a fear-based anger and depression, and he believed that nothing that he could ever do would be good enough to be acceptable to anybody after that. And he was rapidly going downhill at the point where this story begins. He just absolutely had lost it, and he was clutching at the last straw of what he might do to salvage his life at the beginning of this story.
So Brent gets involved in trying to find the horse and the missing boy.
Actually, the boy doesn't go missing until after they find the horse.
Okay.
But no, he does. He goes out on the mountain one afternoon with Autumn. She invites him out there. She sees him and thinks that she has been thinking that he looks really depressed, and that's where she goes when she needs to revive herself. It's out on the mountain, and so she just stops on impulse and invites him out there, and they get to talking about her missing horse, and he says, "Oh, if you need help, call on me." And he wasn't really even thinking about it when he did it, but she does call him, and the story really changes directions from that point.
Now, there's a vandal in this story. What part does he play?
In the beginning, it doesn't seem like he plays much of a part, but by the end of the book, he has become a really I won't say important character, but he has a great effect on everybody's lives. He started out harassing a farmer that had no idea what the problem was. And he didn't bother anybody else, but he tried to cause fires and spray-painted graffiti and just did everything he could to make this man's life miserable, and nobody knows or understands why. And in the beginning, he's just after this one farmer, and in the end, he ends up turning against Autumn and her family and really causing some bad situations.
Now, as we've already talked about, there is a lost horse in the book, and of course the title, Horse in the Wilderness, but that title comes right out of the Bible.
Yes, it does. It comes out of Isaiah 63. It says, "Where is he that put his Holy Spirit within him, that led them through the deep as a horse in the wilderness, that they should not stumble?" It has a kind of double meaning in the book. The horse, of course, is lost. Autumn's cousin accidentally let the horse loose when he was borrowing it without permission. And when Autumn is explaining all this to Brent and they're out on the mountain, Brent suddenly realizes that he is also a horse lost in the wilderness. But Autumn is looking and waiting for her horse to come back, and he realizes that there is nobody in his life that will welcome him back, even if he does manage to find his way home again. And it's a very devastating moment for him when he realizes that he has nothing and no one.
Are Brent and Autumn in this day with, seems like anything goes, especially dealing with sex, are they too old-fashioned and prudish to be interesting to readers today?
Well, if you look at today's media, it seems like the only thing that attracts viewers is either suggestive or outright misconduct. But I don't know. I have always thought that there wouldn't be such an outcry about it if people weren't secretly thinking that we know this is not right and we're just going to get away with it if we can and attract viewers. I really think that a lot of people would agree with Brent and Autumn that they need to follow a more biblical stance. And especially if you are a Christian, these things you know in your own spirit are not acceptable. And I think that they represent a lot of people who really feel that God's way is the best. And we know of all of the problems that it can cause when these moral codes are not followed. And I think that to hear of somebody who actually manages to have a relationship and enjoy life and manage not to get involved in these things, I think it gets kind of maybe a refreshing change for readers.
Is the book ultimately about restoration to God?
I think it is. I believe that when Brett finally cried out to God unintentionally after 2 years of silence, it so completely changed his life. He felt so lost without God, but when he finally got back to God, he felt that he was not good enough and that God could not really accept him. And a lot of the book is about the struggle of how he comes back to the realization that God was waiting for him the whole time, that he wanted to come back to him, and that even though he thought he had sinned away his opportunity to serve God, God could never use him again or want to have close fellowship with him, even though he had this clear call on his life. And his fear of rejection was so strong that even in this, he moved slowly and cautiously and only realized that God is actually waiting for him at every turn. His anger and fear were led to him to so strongly into depression, and he believed that nothing would ever be acceptable to God again. But when he learned to yield and trust God, he discovered that God was there the whole time and that he could move forward in confidence, knowing that God would always guide him in the right direction.
Well, you've got some great themes running through the book. It's quite an adventure, but abiding by God's code for sexual morality enhances instead of diminishing relationships. That's a very strong theme.
I strongly believe that.
And often today, like we've just discussed and you've explained, goes missing in the media. And so you're just setting the standard at where it needs to be in your heart.
I think so. I tried not to make it pushy in the book. I just stated their choices and that they felt that they needed to abide by this. I'm not trying to condemn anything, although I imagine that the infidelity theme was rather strongly condemned. Because it led to all of Brett's problems, even though he was not involved in it, he was the one who suffered from it, and I imagine that comes across pretty strongly in the book. That can definitely ruin some lives if you indulge in that kind of behavior. But I did not want them to say that anyone was condemned or anything if they did not take the same moral stance that Brett and Autumn felt was necessary in their lives.
Autumn Parker, she's a strong woman, but she doesn't fit the stereotype of a modern emancipated woman.
Well, I think that's probably true. She lets people open doors for her. She accepts help from men. She defers to Brent on a lot of occasions, and yet at the other time she will turn around and insist on doing it her way. she's a pretty strong woman, but she doesn't feel like she has to assert herself in a way that makes her, shall I use the word feminist? She's definitely not a feminist.
And she doesn't want to be too intimidating.
No. And she, most of the time, her basic trust is she's very easygoing, and she's very trusting of everyone. And as long as things are going along pretty well and don't violate one of her standards, she's very accepting. She will let things go along. If Brent wants to drive and doesn't trust her driving, she doesn't make a big deal out of it. She understands that he has issues with these things, and it's okay with her. She does not have to assert herself unless it comes to moral issues that she really has a strong stand on. She's not out to prove herself. She's already strong enough to realize that she doesn't have to prove herself.
And she knows who she is.
She does. And yet, at the same time, she is very vulnerable about her own, her own worth. She's not really sure that she is quite good enough to make it into competition with other women. Yet at the same time, she knows who she is in God.
We've been listening to Debbie Eccles. She is the author of her book, Horse in the Wilderness. Debbie, tell us how to get your book.
Well, it's available at Amazon.com, Westo Press, Barnes & Noble. It's available on ebook, just standard booksellers.
Well, thank you very much, Debbie, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole O'Dell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, A Better Way, Where Least is Most. And the author is David Zachariah Glover. And David joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Crossbooks. Hello, David.
Hey, Steve, how are you this day?
Well, I'm doing great, and we're going to even do better because of this discussion, because you're going to show us a better way and that God might use today to transform his people, his church, and as a result, even change our culture because, as you put it, you introduce what you call pure ministry through your book that compels us to view all people differently by awakening the average Christian to the blessings and contributions of people with disabilities, pure people, as you put it, to the church and to the community. Well, they are a special group of people. I think every one of us is touched by one or more. You were touched by your grandson.
Correct, correct. I had a grandson, my first grandson, who God used to sort of open my eyes and to this whole world of disabilities. And that was the my own personal wake-up call to a world that I had no idea existed. And he was a wonderful little boy that literally God used to literally change the direction of my life. And I mean literally, too. I don't mean figuratively, but literally. So I try to tell folks who ask that if had you asked me before Zach was born, did I love Jesus? And I always said, oh, yes, I loved him with all the heart, all the capacities I had. And I thought I was just, you know, one of the best Christians you could ever find, and hurt my arms all the time patting myself on the back. But I found out real quick after Zach was born, and God really used him again to touch me, and I found out that in reality I didn't have a clue, and God used Zach to draw me unto himself in a unique way, and then opened my eyes about how the church is relating to people with disabilities and their families. So that's how it all started for me, Steve.
Now, Zach, your grandson, had how many operations, brain operations?
I think he had, when all was said and done, he had 15.
Oh, my goodness.
So he had, you know, he had a host of issues.
Right.
And as I try to tell folks, that this book is not about Zach. As it turns out, as God sort of showed me, there are many millions of Zachs on this earth that God's using to change us if we'll just take the time to see his presence being manifest in them and if we get to know him. And that's really sort of the message of the book, is that those of us many times who think we don't need friends that we call are pure, in reality we do, and the church is in desperate need of pure people.
How old was Zach when he passed away?
He was 4 and a half. Died very unexpectedly, and I guess it wasn't really given his conditions, but it was unexpected for us because we never thought about it.
So help us understand a little bit more what pure means.
Well, that's a good question. We started our ministry, and again, we after Zach died, and really it was an effort as we experienced, and I watched my daughter and son-in-law experience in our church, was that though people love them and they love Zach, they really didn't know how to respond and lovingly include them into the fellowship. They were part of the fellowship before Zach was born, but in most cases were parents of special needs children. They are really busy and consumed really with life around that disability. And that happened, and my son-in-law and daughter were summarily, not purposely, but because of not being able to come as much and being included, they were sort of isolated and alienated in the church and sort of drifted away and found another church that really embraced Zach and them and really took care of them. They didn't have a formal, what we would call today, special needs ministry. And so just observing that, I just saw there was a great hole in ministry in 99.9% of churches in America today, and that is to these families. But as I started to talk about this to people, I could see people mentally just sort of, when I used the word special needs or disabilities, they would automatically just, I could see them click their brain off. And the same thing I would have done before Zach was born. And so God gave us this term pure that we trying to use to literally change at least the Christian culture perspective of what people with disabilities really are. And it's really an acronym, and P stands for perfectly created by a loving sovereign God, designed for his purposes. And it's just really trying to emphasize that these people are not mistakes, that even in God's perspective, there's nothing really wrong with them, because that's from the way he made them. And he made them that way for a purpose, just like he made you and me. So we try to get that across first, is that God is sovereign, and he knows what he's doing, and he doesn't make mistakes. And these people are perfectly created. The U stands for unique and gifts and talents and desires and contributions that these people can make. We sometimes dismiss them as not being able to do anything, but they can touch people and they can impact this world in ways that us normal people cannot. And so we want to make sure that people understand that they're unique and not just a diagnosis. The R stands for receptive and responsive to our attempts to communicate and acts of love. And that's just encouraging us as Christians to get beyond ourselves, get outside of our comfort zones, and try to connect with pure people, even though it makes us feel uncomfortable or awkward. They are receptive and responsive to our attempts to do that. And then finally, what we've sort of forgotten as a church, I'm afraid, is that these people are eternal, just like you and I. They have eternal souls. And so our motto is, there are no disabled souls. So that's what it stands for, and it's trying to get around the terminology that's used traditionally and has been used, that is just emphasizing once and ever and always that there's something wrong with these people and there's something wrong with these folks. And again, in our culture, it's just sort of given us an excuse to sort of say, well, that sounds good, but I don't do that. And so we're trying to say, no, these people, if we really look at it from the scriptural perspective, and the pure definition is much better than telling somebody they have special needs or they're not able, fully able in some way, is trying to encourage and edify and lift them up, and at the same time, hopefully change our perspective as we love on them. So that's what it means, and it's not mysterious, but it is scriptural. So that's the reason we're trying to change the terminology. And it's working. We're starting to get a little traction.
Right.
And that's good.
Well, it's very well said and very well thought through, because as you've pointed out, these people with special challenges are created perfectly. God uses them in his perfect way to help us, because we have that second greatest commandment, don't we? We all kind of sometimes pass by that one. There's the first greatest, and of course we can say, oh, we love God, but the second one really puts us to the test, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and I sort of talk about it in the book. We don't get to choose our neighbors, and the irony of all of this is that these people, these pure people and these pure families, as we get to be friends with them and get to get into their world, they can literally change us, and they can grow us and refine us, and I believe that. I don't want to say that I speak for God and all of his purposes, but I do believe that one of the purposes that we're missing as the body of Christ, corporately and individually, is just having exposure to and connecting with these pure people and pure families. Because, you know, you just talk about the things that we can learn, and God can teach us just through friendship and fellowship, and including these people in our fellowship. You know, when we typically think of special needs ministry, we sort of typically think of it in a number of ways. It's normally in a box. And we typically think of a Sunday morning kind of Sunday school classroom in the basement. And it's a one-way street where we are doing something to or for them. And we're trying to change that paradigm totally, in that, yes, we do things to help and to come alongside pure people and pure families. But just as importantly, if not more so, as we do that, God uses them to change us, to grow us, and to refine us in ways that he can't do that through us, quote-unquote, normal people. And that's really sort of one of the themes of the book. And probably, I guess, the theme is that, contrary to the popular idea that we are doing something for them, God is using them to change us, and it's always for the good.
Because when it comes right down to the bottom line of God's purposes, it's all about helping us learn to love.
Exactly. And these folks, for the most part, and again, it's our understanding, if you will, our knowledge of pure people, is just based on our own individual experiences. And unfortunately, that's all we have. And we try to encourage people to think about it bigger than our own experiences. And so sometimes we tend to think, well, you know, if that we knew a little girl down the street that was just this cute little girl with Down syndrome, and the family seemingly just did very well. In our perspective of disability, well, there's nothing to it. You know, it's not a big deal. It's not a big problem for anybody, so we tend to discount it that way. And on the other end of the spectrum, if our exposure is to someone who is maybe violent and they have some mental illness, then our tendency to think about all people with disabilities is that they're all that way. But we're trying to say, no, that God's spectrum is broad and wide, and that even through people who, you know, and I really mean this, is that even though, like my grandson, Zach, he couldn't see, he never said a word, he never took a step, yet he's already impacted this world more than I ever will. And as I say, even people who can do nothing in the human realm, they can inspire us, and God can bless us by their simply breathing. And that's true, and a number of people could give testimony to that. Just being around them, somehow God miraculously works through them to touch our spirits. And once again, you know, we just really don't want to miss that. I don't want to miss it. I would have not chosen this for my life. If God would have asked me, do you want a perfectly whole grandson, or do you want one with lots of disabilities? And obviously at the time I would have said, well, I'll take the whole one. But in retrospect now, as I try to explain in the book too, is that what we can see are families, parents, grandparents like myself, who've been exposed and had a child with disabilities or a grandchild. We turn from maybe at birth saying, God, why did you do this to me? When we lose them like we did with Zach, our question has changed to, God, why did you bless me this way? What did I ever do to deserve this? But that's the transition mm-hmm. that can take place.
That's a whole different paradigm, isn't it?
It is. It's a whole other world.
Another shift.
And again,
yeah.
We can't do that to each other. I love you, Steve, but I literally cannot change you.
Right.
But these pure people, sort of, God gives the ability to touch us in a certain way.
And it sounds like we need to be around these people. I mean, often we stay away from them. It's a natural because we're not sure. I guess we're not confident enough in ourselves that we can, be close to them.
That's exactly right. And as I was saying a minute ago, I didn't complete my thought, but most pure people, again, not all, but most are much more authentic and genuine and open and honest and uninhibited than we are. And we need that. We just need that. And that's some of the things they can teach us. And I'm just amazed as I'm around peer people all the time as to, you know, how refreshing that is. And that really they live that passage we were talking about earlier about loving God and loving our neighbor. They tend to do that a lot better than we do.
Right.
A lot of the junk in our lives they don't have. And that's another thing.
Well, they're very innocent. Often many of them are almost like children, no matter what their age is.
Yeah, it is. It's you know, that's the reason pure. We're not implying that all pure people are sinlessly pure. So I don't want to go theologically there, though many pure people are sinlessly pure because they cannot comprehend sin just like a little child.
Mm-hmm.
But they are pure in the sense that there's a simple way to live life in most cases. There's a sincerity and a genuineness that you can only describe as saying there's a certain purity about them. And so we're saying if we're going to emphasize something about somebody as Christians, we need to be edifying and encouraging and not to just constantly identify. I jokingly tell people all the time, I think, you know, I'll give you an example. I'm bald-headed. Haven't been since I was 13. And I jokingly say, what if I went into church Sunday and I went to the minister's desk and said, hey, do y'all have anything special for bald-headed people? And everybody chuckles. But I said, if you live your life as a person with disabilities, that's your life. That's your identity, and nothing ever changes. You're always the family with the little boy with cerebral palsy, or the mother of the little boy with cerebral palsy, or the dad, or the sister, or the brother. And that's your soul identity. And so if there is a soul identity that these pure people are going to have, let's make it a good one. And we realize that, you know, we're not the government. We're not saying by changing words that changes hearts. But as people start to reflect a little bit more about what it says, hopefully it will, God will use it to change people's hearts.
We have about a minute left, David. Finish this thought, which is one of your chapter headings. So the next time you're in Walmart.
That's a funny one. That's the last. Our whole emphasis, again, on ministry and on reaching out to pure people is that we all, if we are believers particularly, we already have all that we need to do there. We have the indwelling Holy Spirit that can help us do it. And we use the term, we need to extend our comfort zones, get outside of ourselves, quit thinking about ourselves, quit thinking that we're going to feel awkward or uncomfortable talking to this person who we don't know how they're going to respond. We just do that. And so I always end, every time I talk or speak, we have these big pure celebrations across America, and I always tell people that's how we end it. We say, the next time you're in Walmart, just get outside of yourself. When you see that person, that pure person, somewhere in that Walmart, go search them out. Just ask God to give you the courage, and just go up and speak to them and try to engage them and see what God will do. And so we're trying to say that taking ministry, once again, out of the walls of the church and saying we are the church, and let's go out and reach these people wherever they are, and to extend our comfort zones, get outside of ourselves, and be the hands and feet and heart of Christ.
Very well said, David. David Zachariah Glover, the author of his book, A Better Way, Where Least is Most. David, tell us how to get your book.
You can get it on our website, which is pure-ministries.com. And on our website, you can then, if you can order the, I always sign all the books ordered through our website. And there you can get links back to Amazon or Barnes & Noble for electronic versions. So you can order the book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or the publisher, Crossbooks. And you can get them through any of those ways.
Well, thank you, David, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
And this interview has been brought to you by Crossbooks.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.